Chapter 5.
Centurion,
voxed Astakos from his place at the centre of the formation.
Our position here is unsustainable. We must realign and adapt before half of the company or more is lost.
A snarl of frustration hissed from between Major's clenched teeth. He rammed his shield forward, pulping three bodies that remained upright in the crush, even in death. He knew there was wisdom in his brother's words, and the wider perspective the standard-bearer's place in the ranks afforded him compared to Major's own fighting on the front line. Separated from the immediate bloodshed, Astakos was watching the Unbroken as they were slowly being swallowed, man by man.
"Close ranks and withdraw!"
Major gave the order, swatting away a falling woman with the flat of his chain-axe.
"Draw bolters and walk it back!"
Those world-eaters who still had use of their spears held them back, allowing the brothers behind them to take the weapons and hand them their bolt-guns in exchange. Locking them into their shields, they sent rounds thudding forward into chambers. There was no need to aim. Firing in accordance with the Legion's tactics for a sustained barrage, the phalanx loosed a pair of mass-reactive shots with each backward step, unleashing a cacophony of shells in steady, terrible rhythm. The effect of point-blank bolter fire on a concentrated mass of unarmored targets was devastating. Bodies were blown apart, limbs twisted and spun through the air. Shots that killed one target passed through to detonate and kill three others behind them. It was beyond carnage, beyond massacre, and made all the more disturbing by the utter lack of impact it exhibited upon the surviving robed throng still massing against them. Major took advantage of the little separation they had made for themselves to take in the wider battle around the 18th. Runes marking the individual companies blinked haphazardly across his visor display, a far cry from the united line of an organized advance. The rest of the Legion seemed to be faring little better than the Unbroken were. Communication between commanders was fleeting and muted by the crash of shields and screaming chain weapons. A stormbird ripped overhead in a screeching dive, trailing flame from her engines, after dozens of Genons had thrown themselves from the city spires into the turbines. It shattered against the ground in a ball of flame and shrapnel. A light tank, its treads glued by the gore of countless bodies, crawled with the enemy, buried until it could neither fire nor move. Contact with the fleet in orbit spoke of the same situation playing out in every zone of conflict. The Legion had divided itself in order to land on each of Genna's continents simultaneously, moving swiftly to launch a lightning assault against the primary population centres and seize control of the major industrial and transportation infrastructure. All of the 12th Strike Forces had been greeted by the native inhabitants in their millions, all ground to a halt as the World Eaters were buried by a veritable avalanche of artificial blood and flesh. A few units, mainly assault squads who had landed via drop pod insertion, had managed to break through into the urban centres, but the verticality of the spires and narrow confines of the city's streets made the Genon resistance even more suffocating than it was on open ground. Major craned his head up to the skies. The combat, such as it was of such close order that none of the warships in the fleet had intervened with surgical strikes from orbit. With a blink, the Centurion opened a tight-beam vox link to the void. The fuzzy image of the Hound's Tooth's shipmaster appeared in a tiny window in the corner of Major's display, revealing a grizzled man in a crisp white uniform.
"Captain Yuta," said Major.
"A Centurion,"
Yuta replied, his gruff voice marred by spikes of interference.
"By the Throne World, what is happening down there? The orbital Picts we are getting, I've never seen the like."
"We need your lances, Captain. Bring the Tooth down as low as you can. I will transmit targeting solutions to you from here on the surface."
The image in Major's visor wavered. Captain Yuta's portrait turned, engaging in a curt dialogue with someone off-screen.
"My lord,"
Yuta answered after a few moments, the strain in his voice clear in spite of the fragile comms.
"With the conditions planetside, I can't guarantee the fire from our guns won't compromise Legion assets. None of us can. After Brujo, we...
The link suffered, cutting off the end of Yuta's sentence. But Major already knew what he was going to say. Brujo had been 3 compliances ago, when an orbital strike from the fleet had been fired against the Primarch's orders. Not expecting the bombardment, the better part of a chapter fighting alongside Angron had been incinerated in moments. Once the battle had ended, the Primarch had returned to orbit, and not a single one of the shipmasters who had loosed their ship's guns was now alive to see Genna. The admirals were refusing to lend their lances to the surface fight and run the risk of killing their legion masters in the crossfire again. Majo and the other warriors on the surface were on their own. With a frustrated blink, he severed the connection to the fleet. Panning his helm left and right, Majo sought out the standards of their brother units. Other companies had attacked with their own tactics, abandoning the phalanx from the start in favour of charging at a sprint into the enemy and laying into them with axe and sword. These units had succeeded initially in cutting deep into the Genon horde, but now quickly found themselves cut off from their reserve support and scattered amongst the enemy without any semblance of cohesion. For every company that had attacked with the customary phalanx, 2 had chosen such frenzy, including those meant to stand in reserve of the 18th. Anarchy reigned. Majo held back the urge to spit. Gear would never have tolerated this. Had the last Legion Master ever witnessed such a display, he would have had the commanders of those companies flogged and demoted to line troopers in view of the entire Legion, before having them exiled to the auxiliary reserve companies in disgrace. Where was the accountability? Where was the brotherhood? It galled Majo to his core to see the central tenets of the Legion's identity, an art of warfare that had sustained them since Terror, so easily cast aside and replaced with blind aggression. But it was simple to understand why. That was how the Primarch fought. Without reason, without thought, without consequence. Angron was less a being of flesh and blood than a storm of violence, all restraint lost to the implants tearing apart his mind. It was an awesome sight to behold, and Majo could not deny the power of it. But adopting Angron's way of war was killing the World Eaters here. The fusillade of bolter fire had bought the Unbroken a handful of seconds, but that was all. Serene faces once more filled the visors of the World Eaters, smiling kindly as they stepped over the mutilated remains carpeting the ground. They called out softly to their invaders, speaking of the needlessness of their conflict. They threaded their way through the ranks of the company like vines winding through crumbling stone, taking hold of a World Eater's arms and legs until they stumbled, and piling atop their chests until ceramites split and organs pulped. Hands calmly tore at helmet seals, inserting slender fingers into eyes and beyond to crack the thin bone behind them and scramble the brain.
Oh, this is folly, spat Hanno.
He had lost his shield in the fighting, and now worked with his phalanx blades to hack and slice at anything that came near him.
We should pull back and order the fleet to burn this world to glass from orbit.
No,
said Major, as he vaporized another swathe of Genons with his Serpenta. He swiftly holstered the pistol in favour of his chain axe, swinging low and halving 3 more in a blur of screaming teeth.
He won't accept that. You know he won't.
You believe he will accept this?
Asked Orontes, the first axe giving voice to the thought filling every head in the company.
He will when we're victorious, answered Major. Their numbers may be vast, but they're not infinite. So long as we draw breath, we will fight and we will kill. Call forth your wrath, kindred. It is they who will break first, not us.
Renewed vigour surged through the 18th as they rallied around their centurion, driving out the lactic sting that prickled at their muscles from hours of prolonged melee combat. Shoulder locked next to shoulder. One brother waded into the Genon's midst with chain axe and gladius, while another covered his back and flanks with the booming crash of bolter fire. For the first time since hostilities had commenced, Major and his brothers were winning ground again. The shadow of Malkoya's gates fell over them, tantalizingly close and yearning to be stormed. They had to get inside, press their advantage and make the Genons reel. Then the capital would be theirs for the taking. A blurt of noise cried out from somewhere to the 18th's right. It was a standardized vox tone, denoting a compromised situation and a call for aid. It did not come from the lips of a centurion, Majo realized as his heart sank. That meant there was no centurion alive within that company to voice it.
"The 44th,
voxed Astakos. He raised his banner and turned it to face their right side. Majo swore under his breath as he pulled back for a moment to scan their flank, his eidetic memory recalling the company tasked with being their support. The 44th was dying. Like so many of the other units, its commander had hurled his warriors blindly into the fight, and now they found themselves dissolving one dead legionary at a time. It could scarcely be recognized as a company any longer, just isolated pockets of marble and blue, brothers fighting back to back until they were drowned. If they did not intervene, their brothers would be completely overrun.
"They have pushed too far ahead of the line and are cut off," reported the standard-bearer. "All of the other companies are engaged. No one else can move to support them. If we do not, they're lost." "What was Barker thinking?"
said Majo, as he ripped a Genon in two with his chain axe.
"It seems the centurion wasn't thinking at all," replied Astakos. "Barker and the 44th were supposed to be behind us and functioning as our rearguard support."
"Major, the gates are within our grasp,"
said Orontes between scything slashes of his axe.
"We have the chance to break them here if we press. Look at the time. If we pull back now, there will not be enough remaining to advance."
Lightning surged past Major and immolated a dozen Genons.
"Time is against us, Captain," said Tethys. "Either we aid the 44th or we advance. But we cannot do both."
"We cannot leave them," said Majo.
"Look at the chrono!"
Orontes shook a pair of robed bodies loose from his shoulders.
"A horde of these bastards lies between us and the 44th. They were supposed to be our support. They should not have been attacking at all. Barker knew that, and he ran in like a fool, and now he's got what he deserved. By breaking off and helping them, we will lose the initiative we have bled for, and he will bleed us more for our failure."
"No!"
Majo roared.
"We do not achieve victory by leaving our own behind.
I will not stand by with our backs turned and abandon our kindred to die while we can aid them."
"But the Primarch's orders! To the abyss with his countdown!"
snapped Majo, his mind decided.
"They were our brothers long before we were his sons.